what is it that disturbs your life? What is it that we have difficulties with? If we say it, if I say it in general terms, it's differences, what we could call phenomena, what we could call the relative cold, hot, what I want, what I don't want. Oh, it's so terrible, it's close to zero here, the weather is terrible. Oh, it's so much. Oh, aren't you lucky? You in California, you've got it in the 50s and 60s and even 70s in the middle of the winter. Isn't that great? Oh, so terrible. I've got a diagnosis of cancer. I'm going to have surgery and who knows what, I might die. Ah, isn't it wonderful? I got a raise and I have all this money. All of these different kinds of phenomena, differences, are what we make difficult for ourselves or for others. In practice, in, if I say, Buddha Dharma, in the Zen tradition, we have a set of practices that clarify and elucidate this matter, that's known as the five ranks or five positions. This stems from an early teaching in China that's attributed to Shito or Sekito Kisen, who lived in the 8th century Common Era, and after him, I'll use the Chinese names to the extent that I could pronounce it, Yueshan, Yunyan, and then Tungshan, is also known as Tozan. Some of you might be familiar with this. There's two long verse poems, one known as Sandokai or Sun Tsang Tung Chi, which is sometimes translated into English as identity of relative and absolute. That's definitely Shi Tao's. And then there's another set of verses known as Hokkyo Zammai or Pao Ching San Mai, which is sometimes translated as Jeweled Mirror Samadhi or Precious Mirror Samadhi, which is attributed to Shito, but we don't know exactly if he was the author. In any case, what was in it is transmitted down through the lineage that I just linked to, Tungshan, which is Tozan. And Tozan clarified it in what's known as the five ranks and wrote a set of poems connected to each of these. And this became a major part of practice in China, both in the Cao Tung school, which later became the Soto school, and event also at some point into the Linji or Rinzai school. In our tradition, this is treated at what should I say, at an advanced stage. Excuse me. In formal practice, and it's in a sense sums up the whole nature of practice. It's the relationship of the phenomenal existence, and phenomenal existence means everything, physical, mental, and we could say the absolute, we could say the emptiness, we could say the equality. So I will for the next 4 days speak on this matter in ways that can help us clarify our life and our practice. I obviously won't cover all of this for the simple reason that first, we only have 4 days and it's 5 ranks, so I will say that. In a way, I shouldn't even talk about it. It's considered that one, if I use the expression, loses one's virtue by speaking of these matters too much in public. In the Zen tradition, there's a phrase that you lose your eyebrows if you speak too much of this. Since, in a sense, speaking of this isn't the point, but it's rather to use this as practice for us to clarify this jeweled mirror samadhi, which is really what our life is, and clarify how to practice with this realization, understanding, and actualization of the interrelationship between phenomenal differences in our life, the relative and the absolute, as it's sometimes called, or the phenomenal, the differences and the equality. There's a number of different ways to translate the Chinese or Japanese words that list these 5 ranks, that are connected with these 5 ranks. So what are differences? That's the first matter that we need to begin. Even before we begin looking at these 5 ranks, and let me just list them just so that you will have that part clear. The first is the relative in the absolute, sho chu hen in the Japanese way of pronouncing the Chinese, and the second is the absolute within the relative, hen chu sho. Then the third is the absolute alone. The fourth, there's 2 different versions. In the Zaozong way, the Soto way, it's the relative alone. In the Rinzai way, it's arriving at the interpenetration of the relative and the absolute. And the fifth in both is integration of relative and absolute. Relative and absolute. What is this? I should say that this was a major focus of practice, mostly oral, mostly private, face-to-face in China. And to an extent, it's when it started to get written about and, in a sense, elaborated, there was a tendency for it to become conceptualized. So Dogen, in one sense, was very critical of this conceptualizing of it, of writing about it, of talking about it. But in another sense, if you look at the show Bogenzo, you could see that over and over he's working with the different ranks and the nature of these. For a long period of time in Japan, this was treated as a Soto practice and not really dealt with in the Rinzai school. But Hakuin, who is the reviver of Rinzai practice in the beginning of the 18th century, made a point of emphasizing this as a very important advanced practice, and that he says, today's students are like blind men who have thrown away their staffs, calling them useless baggage. Of themselves, they stumble and fall into the mud of heterodox views and cannot get out until death overtakes them. They never know that the five ranks is the ship that carries them across the poisonous sea surrounding the rank of the real. Real is the true nature, we want to say the absolute, but we'll get to it. The precious wheel that demolishes the impregnable prison house of the two voids. They do not know the important road of progressive practice. They are not versed in the secret meaning within this teaching. Anyway, I won't go further. So, for a period of time, he began working with this. He says in some of his writing that he studied it with a Soto teacher. Another place he talks about how he studied it with his Rinzai teacher, and then he, in his studies and practices with his students, emphasized the importance of it in working with this, and he wrote extensively on it. In our tradition, in the tradition where I was trained, the five ranks comes at the end of formal koan practice and is treated in a sense as a summation and a further clarification of the five ranks. Now, as I said, five ranks, the words sho chu hen, so sho and hen is can be translated in different ways, relative and absolute. Apparent and real is another English translation. There's other translations that I have that use the phrases phenomenal and universal. Another uses diversity and equality. These are all valuable. Absolute and relative we talked about. So all of these are valuable differences in English because they point to what's important in this. So all of these words are there to remind us, one, of how we tend to see our life, how we tend to value things, whether it's in terms of differences, in terms of relative, in terms of phenomena, and what creates difficulties. That's the first step. Because everyone sees differences. Everyone sees the relative. But if you only see the relative, then you're always getting in trouble. I don't don't like what he did. That's relative. How come she got that? How come it's so cold? How come it's so hot? How come I feel so terrible? Oh, I feel wonderful. Oh, he's sick and dying. Oh, and you can go on and on in all sorts of different ways where the relative makes difficulties for us. Or our way of perceiving it narrowly, believing our stories about differences, differences so-called within, differences so-called without, differences that are physical, differences that are mental, differences that are mind, differences that are for other people, differences that are in the universe. If we just see that aspect, then we're in trouble, because we'll endlessly go and make difficulties for ourselves and others, suffer and cause harm. So the first aspect of practice, in a way, is clarifying this. What is differences, and what is, if we say, the absolute or the equality? See, in place of absolute, we sometimes talk about equality. See? The equality and oneness of life as, in a sense, underlying the differences. There's sometimes you talk about as if the differences are the top of a mathematical form. In other words, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But there's a line underneath, under that, and below that is a zero. Zero meaning when you have numbers over zero, what happens with it? See? Then it's a whole different nature. Because things divided by zero are what, if you're mathematically inclined? No, they're not zero. Yes. Now, it's not the same. This is just an analogy. But the point is, if we only see the specific number and we don't see the other side in terms of our life, then he's a 5, she's a 7, she's a 10, she's a 3, and so on and so forth, and then we believe the numbers. But we fail to see that they're all underlined, so to speak, by this absolute equality. Which means what? Which means, when we say it in the Heart Sutra, form is empty. Of course, it's not quite that, but we are beginning to get in this direction. So this is the apparent within the real. So it's being able to see, to work with, to practice in our life, with not just our ordinary way of seeing things. And this is what we're doing in Zazen. The first thing when you sit down in Zazen, when you start watching the manipulations and the activity of mind, your usual mind-body reactions, expectations and beliefs, you notice how constantly you're adding on and holding on to differences, relatives, the relative nature of the phenomena inside and outside, and believing that. Because we believe that, we make trouble for ourselves and others. So, in a sense, the first part of undertaking this practice is clarifying what is relative, what is the absolute. And in a sense, that's the first rank. You really can't go further unless you begin to clarify that. See, clarifying that, then you can go further. further. And so what is equality? And even more so, what's the difference between equality in an ordinary sense of the word, in other words, the way we use it in our life, and equality in the, if I use the word, the Buddhist sense of the word, or the practice nature of equality? Because, of course, things aren't equal. This and this, this lectern and this cup aren't equal. This one's wood, this one's pottery, this one's small, this one's big, this one's blue and white, this one's, I suppose you could say, beige, yellowish. Right? All sorts of differences. But what is that? See? What is that? In order for them, for me to say that they're equal in an ordinary way, what would have to be? What would have to be for me to say that they're equal?
Interchangeable.
Well,
they're both cups or they're both lecterns.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they would have to be the same form, because you believe this top number, in other words, the top number on those, on that mathematical form of saying it, has to be the same. If this one is one, this one has to be one. If this one is five, this one has to be five. Otherwise, if one is five and one is one, they're not the same, right? So we say the first thing we have to see is, if we say form is emptiness, what does that mean? What is emptiness? What is equality in a practice sense? What is absolute equality? What's absolute equality? What is form is emptiness? Let's go back to that mathematical model for a moment. If 5 is the numerator and 0 is the denominator, am I correct? Is that the way it is? So, then what does that equal? If 1 is the numerator and 0 is the denominator, what is that equal?
They're both equal to infinity.
Okay. Now, infinity is a big fancy word, and I'm not saying it's exactly so, and mathematically this is somewhat just an analogy, but what does it mean when we say form is emptiness? See, what does that mean? See, that's really where the first true clarification of practices. And we do it not because I explain it or you agree to what I explain or to what you've read, but because of our own, if I say, even though it's intrinsically so, unless it's experientially so with, for us, we're going to constantly get in trouble. So it's not a matter of me telling this to you, but a matter of us seeing in our own experience what the nature of our arising body-mind condition is. What it is to sit in the midst of all sorts of circumstances arising and passing. Whether it's sitting in formal zazen, or being with a sick child, being with a healthy child, being with a friend who is dying of cancer, being with a friend who just had a baby and is celebrating the glowing health of the mother and child, being in cold, frigid, below freezing weather with wind chills below zero, or being in Palm Springs with sun and warmth and gentle breezes. See. Having to wash the dishes with all sorts of mess on the dishes, and being able to stretch out and relax in a rest period. All sorts of, someone saying it after session, oh, you look so like you had such a deep samadhi, you did session so well, I really admire how well you sit. And then someone else saying, you know, you said that stupid thing there, how could you have said that? Do we take one and we, great,
oh, how could they say that to me? Oh, I'm hurt so much.
See? Right there. See, we are caught in the differences and don't see what this is. That's where our life gets us in trouble, if we just hold to the differences, to the relative, to the phenomena. Because our life is guaranteed to present us with all sorts of phenomena. Or as the Buddha discovered early, before he actually began formal practice, we face poverty, some people, sickness, some people, death, all of us, sooner or later, decomposing, we face losing people that we want to have with us, having to be with people we don't want to be with, and so on and so forth. So what does absolute equality mean? See, absolute equality, on one sense you could use the word emptiness, but emptiness is a big fancy word. Another way of talking about is being able to freely respond to circumstances, meaning we're not trapped by our reactive habits. See, reactive habits is what we always get in trouble with. Someone says how wonderful you are, and you go, stop preening. And someone says how stupid your comments are, and you go, or you go, how could you say that? You didn't say anything better. Or, see? In a way, this is what we have to manifest in wisdom and compassion, but that's jumping ahead of ourselves. Our practice, if I say it, is to, in being experiencing, is what? Is to know for ourselves the present moment of what, who we are. See, differences, I want to stress, are in all forms. So it's not just physical, it's not just mental, it's anything that you can conceive of is differences. See, anything you can conceive of is differences. So ordinarily, in our ordinary life, and I just say this as explanatory, we see differences as mutually exclusive. See, we see differences as mutually exclusive because we only see the top number. Five is excludes one. One excludes five. That's where, if I go back to our practice, is that we are able to go beyond merely the form, the differences, but we see the apparent within the real. So we see the one and five within the true as manifesting nothing but this true, if I say emptiness. I shouldn't say such stinky words. See? Because ordinarily we see things as fixed, as separate, as either or situations. Either she says nice things about me, or she says terrible things about me. Either he's my friend or she's my enemy. We tend to see all sorts, and then of course we say, well, on one hand she's my friend, but on the other hand she's my enemy, and then we start getting even more convoluted and caught up. But in our immediate reaction to circumstances, one moment by moment, see, in a way, fundamental to our practice is to go beyond this fixed separateness. Of course, I'm explaining. That's not much use. See, this is something we have to do for ourselves. Nevertheless, I will talk about it as an encouragement for you to do this for yourself. See, fundamentally, we tend to see things, well, that happened because this, but that's, I can only see a little bit, but otherwise it's just a coincidence that that happened, that this happened. You know, there's maybe some explanation that makes us feel a little better, but it's, you know, the explanation's just a little piece. Whereas the fundamental aspect of practice is ongoing change of cause and effect, so that every event is nothing but the perfect manifestation of the cause and effect of the whole universe. That's, or the cause and effect of the whole of true nature, or I say absolute equality, another stinky word. So, if we have a clear, that's why cause and effect is considered such an important part of Buddhist tradition, because what it does is it lets us see the interdependent interbeing of our life and of all the circumstances of the life. Therefore, her saying how terrible I am, that's just the perfect manifestation of the emptiness of causes and effects. Not mine as opposed to hers, not hers as opposed to someone else's. And it's for me to be able to hear that as what it is. Not just the number one, but the number one over the zero, as the manifestation of cause and effect. Or my winning this $100, I don't know where, but somewhere, being given $100. Oh, that's great, but I see it for what it is. Not just something to do with me being so wonderful, but it's just the manifestation of cause and effect. It's not a reason to then go lord it over others and think I'm so wonderful, etc., etc. So I'm just getting started here, but I don't want to go too much, because we haven't even begun talking at length about this. This has just been an introduction about this first of the five ranks. The first, which is the relative within the absolute, the relative within the absolute, or the apparent within the real. So maybe a good thing to do now would be to, I will read the poem that goes with it, but I will not talk about the poems because I don't think it's something that you all can relate to that easily, but I want you to have a familiarity with it. But so I will read it just once so that you hear it. This is the poem. Let's see which version I want to read. Yeah, I think this one's. Well, in this is the relative in the absolute, or the diversity in the equality. In the beginning of the dead of night, at the small hours before the moon shines, do not be surprised that people meeting do not recognize one another, and yet they still harbor a faint memory of the fascination of past day. So this is a poem that was written by Dongshan as a way of elucidating the fundamental matters connected with this. Dongshan is, let me look to give you an approximate date. He's when is Dongshan? About the 10th century. No, he's at the end of the 9th century in China. 9th century Common Era. In China. Okay, I will stop here, but as I said, my intention is to continue investigating and clarifying this and using this as a way to talk about our practice. So, in a sense, this the apparent within the real is really the fundamental first aspect of our practice. First aspect doesn't mean that it's beginners. First meaning if we do it stepwise, and of course the universe isn't stepwise, but if we set it out in that way, this is what, as our practice deepens, we begin to appreciate this, our life that it is, seeing, going beyond the phenomena and discriminations and the relative stories that we usually believe, not because we're going somewhere else, but in order to truly appreciate the zero that underlies our life. And I don't mean zero as emptiness, but the zero that enables our life to manifest the infinite that it is. See? So that we're no longer caught by just the form, but that we see for ourselves that the form is exactly empty. And if the form is exactly empty, then how and where and what our life activity and functioning is becomes very different. Not because I say so, but because with your own tongue you taste it, with your own body you manifest it. See? So, in one sense, only in one sense I'm using it as an analogy, this is form is empty, next step becomes empty is form. But we'll just stop here at this point, and though I thought not to talk or have discussion, I think at least today we can talk about this a little bit so that we can begin to see how we could connect this with our practice, how we could connect our practice with this. Okay, so I'll stop here, and I know some of you might want to ask some questions or make some comments about this, so feel free to do that. Yes, Fred.
You once gave a talk that we all had the same last name. So to me, that's the absolute, the relative and the absolute. Is that we have this sort of essence of sameness, even though we all look different. Maybe the first name, maybe that's the numerator, and then analogy, I don't know.
Okay.
But one other thing, when you were asking the question about the cup and the lectern, you said, how could they be equal? But it's not that they would have to be the same to be equal. Equal isn't the same.
What is equal? If I say I have 5 coins here and 2 bills here, what would have to do for that, for those 2 batches of currency to be equal? Or I should say 6 coins here and, or whatever number, and 2 bills here. What would they?
Yeah, add up to that, so you're saying.
Yeah, that's the way we ordinarily use the word. Again, this is just an analogy. Don't get caught in the analogy. But, don't we usually say, if these 2 positions are equal, you would say, well, they have to get the same salary and benefits as that one, or at least have the same power and prestige as that one, or some such thing.
It's usually not the same, but yeah, okay.
I mean, but you have to have some way.
That's how we function in the world.
Yes.
In a relative way.
Or you could say these 2 weigh the same. Okay, they look different, but they've got the same weight. So this is 5 pounds and that's 5 pounds. Mm-hmm. We need some way of evaluating them as the equal in that sense. We have a hard time if we can't do that. And we can't do that when we're just holding to or stuck on the differences or the relative nature of it or the phenomenal nature of it. Because we think phenomena are whole and complete and separate, as opposed to these 2 phenomena are both manifestations of cause and effect of the same, let's say, emptiness, according to circumstances and conditions. Sometimes it becomes paper, sometimes it becomes wood. Or however. Now, it's not that simple. I'm just using analogies to get us going in that direction. This isn't enough. But because it's not a matter of us getting the analogies, but starting to see in our own life functioning, in our own life experiencing, how we tend to get caught in one side and not the other. We say this, not that. We say, you know, when it's cold, that's bad. When it's warm, that's good, or whatever. When I'm hungry, that's terrible. When I've had a good meal, then I'm satiated. See? When he speaks poorly of me, that's not fair. I'm hurt. I'm sad. I don't want that. I shouldn't have to put up with it. I should get angry about it. When he praises me, isn't that wonderful? I just go home with a warm glow. And in a way, our Zazen is the first base of our training of this kind of practice, because we get to see what it is to sit stably, being present, experiencing with all sorts of thoughts I like, thoughts I don't like, feelings that are I should have, feelings I shouldn't have, so on and so forth. But it's not limited to the formal sitting. That's just the beginning to all our functioning from morning to night. The food that shows up that I want, and the food that shows up that I shouldn't have to eat that. The job that, that's an important job. If I do that job, everyone will know how important I am. And that job, why should I have to clean toilets? Or whatever. Or how come I don't have a nice position like he does or like she does? All sorts. So our practice becomes, whether in Sesshinin or in our life, all these sorts of circumstances that show up in our life, so to speak. Maybe by coincidence, or maybe we begin to see they are this universe manifesting in all sorts of ways. How come she's sick? How come he's not sick? As I said, how come I have cancer? How come someone else doesn't have cancer? What am I to make of that? If I get caught in that, or how come now I have cancer and last month I didn't have cancer because I didn't know? Or they thought, you know, I was counting on the doctor saying I don't have cancer. Now they say I do. If I get caught up in that, bummed out, some people go out and get drunk over that, etc., etc. So that's what we're talking about, and that's what our practice, I say to you, whether you want to or not, takes us in that direction of being able to truly see that all the phenomenal circumstances are the opportunity of manifesting and being this light that we are, this true nature. I don't like to use sticky words, but I'll say the word emptiness. It doesn't help us at all, because then it just becomes a conceptual fiction that we dream about. No such thing, that isn't. But that's what phenomenal within the universal. This is another way to translate it. Phenomenal within the universal, instead of equality, instead of absolute, talk about universal. Universal means we all share it. That's, if I go back to that other analogy, please remember, these are all analogies, they're not it. The other analogy of every number being the numerator over, on top of a line, underneath which there's the denominator of zero. So that's the universal denominator of all phenomena. if we are able to remember that, then we are also able to start seeing what that equals when you have a numerator over a denominator. What is that? Therefore, from the beginning, that numerator isn't how you think it is, but it's the zero underneath it, which is then the universal. I don't want to say more, because the more stinky words I use, the more we believe them and try to make something of them. It's not that. It's a matter of tasting this for ourselves, seeing this in our life, in whichever way. And our practice reveals, allows us to reveal our life for ourselves, thus to grasp for ourselves what, who this life is. Okay. I saw a hand somewhere, I don't remember where. One, two.
I was just thinking that the zero, you know, as you were talking, is what's fundamental in everything.
As long as we don't use the word fundamental to think it's somewhere else.
Yeah. What does that mean?
In other words, the fundamental is right here in the so-called not fundamental. See, it's the fundamental and the not fundamental are all fundamentally together all the time. It's not a matter of believing this, but a matter of practicing so that for ourselves we know this. See, for ourselves we know this.
Though I can have a hard time coming on a homeless person.
Yes.
I feel terrible.
Good. So you feel terrible is wonderful compassion. But do
I
you
also feel he's in my way?
Oh, and he's nasty looking like that. And
no, but I don't want to deal with it.
Oh. And how does I don't want to deal with it if you have to deal with it every step down the block where you are?
You just do.
Well, okay. Do you get testy and short-tempered? We get to notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Do we get repulsed and feel revulsion? I don't know. I remember someone talking about his training in a monastery, and his assignment was to clean toilets. This is in Japan, and Japanese toilets are different than American toilets. And this was about 70, 80 years ago, 100 years ago. So the toilets were even more primitive. They were a hole in the ground with, if I'll say it brutally, piss and shit all over. And he was very gingerly, he was a young novice at the time, very gingerly trying to clean, and his teacher came in and said, "Bah!" Pushed him aside and rolled up his sleeves and got down there and really, "You don't know what you're doing in your practices," teacher said, something like that. Because he was he felt revulsion and repulsion at all the disgusting things that he had to clean up at that point. And he shouldn't, whatever thoughts he had, he shouldn't have to, it's not fair, etc., 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 etc. And it's just a visceral reactiveness. See, that's our practice, is to deal with these visceral reactions. There's no blame involved, because the phenomenal and being attached to discrimination and differences and relative is the way we've been trained by cause and effect of inside, outside, doesn't make a difference. From ourself, from others, biological, genetic, social, etc., etc., in all the ways. That's the way we ordinarily operate in the world. Except that ordinary way of operating, I have to turn to look to you because it hurts my, because of the eye. That ordinary way of operating has the consequences of just perpetuating stress and suffering for us and others. That's why our practice is to sit, both physically and, if I say it in the broader sense of being zazen, in the midst of all sorts of circumstances, not just nice, comfortable ones, not just when I feel like it, not just what I want. And if you sit regularly, you can't avoid them. Or, I should say it differently, they will arise. Whether you avoid them or not, or try to avoid them, gets to show where we play with our practice as opposed to being willing to do it. You know, trying to avoid the filthy toilet that we need to clean at this moment, whether it's the toilet of our mind, emotions, disgusting things we feel like saying or have said, or things people say to us or do, or things that happen inside, outside, to our body, in the world. So, okay.
I see pretty clearly, I think, how judging an emotion is inherent in the differences in seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I perceive difference and I make a judgment, or I feel one way or the other about it. What's difficult for me is that language itself relies on difference. You can't process language without, that's what language does, is it identifies differences. It identifies same things too, but it has to identify differences to identify same things. And it seems to me that literally run out of language trying to see this denominator.
Right.
And I think where I'm at is I don't have any thoughts to process it because I've run out of language.
Yes, that's wonderful. Really run out of language completely, because practice, zazen, the truth of our life, isn't in the limitations of language. It's beyond that. It's not that there's anything wrong, because we're going to go over more and more language that's being used, but it's not us being used by the language. See, the practice isn't about getting new sets of words. It's going beyond the limitations of language and the limitations of what we believe the rules of language are. I speak, but don't think that what I say is going to feed you this. In fact, later on there's a comment about you can't just, for those teachers who grind this up and explain it to their students and feed them with it, that's grandmotherly kindness that poisons them. So, yes. The problem is that we think language is going to take care of reality or even of our life. And the truth is, language is just one of many tools, and it's a tool that if we become trapped by it, then language uses us and we suffer all sorts of ways and do harm in all sorts of ways to ourselves and others because we believe that the language is the reality. That's why Zazen isn't about language. I'm speaking here just as encouragement for your practice, but practice isn't memorizing a whole bunch of new words or convincing you of new sets of words. That's not practice. It's not adequate, sufficient. It's only an encouragement and to prop you up to get you to do what needs to be done. And, well, I will say, yes, if you try to process it in the limitations of language, you're going to just be endlessly frustrated, which is fine. Yeah. Language is just the one-sided relativity of it. In a way, you really can't say it. That'll come later. But anything that we can conceive, which is language, is phenomena. Anything, and this is the phenomena with, if I use that word, or the differences within the absolute, within the real, within the universal. Language is not universal. Language is relative. Language is particularity. Good. Everyone seems silent, so maybe this is a good place to stop. So, tomorrow we'll continue clarifying this matter. This interplay, if I say, of relative and absolute, of absolute and relative, and always it's not important for you to remember anything particular that I say. If some of it is of value in encouraging and clarifying your practice, good. If there's something you want to bring up in Dzogchen, please do. Thank you.
Copyright Elihu Genmyo Smith.